T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
3-0 pitch is hit in the air to left and caught. Jared Walsh. What a play coming in to get it with a sliding grab to rob Bryant and to rob the National League. What a play.
3-0, I was like, you know, we're down 3. We hit a grand slam here, and I would definitely win the All-Star game. That was the only thing on my mind. So I was like, oh, sure, I'm definitely going to swing right here no matter what.
It was fun. Whenever you get on the field with All-Star, some of the best in the game, especially, you know, they got guys that are young, and then you got, you know, Nelly Cruz is a little bit older than some. But when you're on a team like this and a part of something like this, it's always fun.
Do you have the same kind of adrenaline as you would in a regular game? Or?
I mean, yeah.
You did.
You don't want to give up hits.
Yeah,
I'm not here to give up a hit or a run, so that's for sure.
Or walk.
Well, walk's fine. I was trying to strike him out. I had to get at least one. Yeah, when you see, look at Tim and Liam. They've all been through some different things in their life and in the game of baseball. So I think I've had about the easiest story out of all of them. So it's just an honor to be a part of what, you know, they were able to achieve this year.
Wish we'd have gotten up to the plate and taken a couple of swings out there.
Yeah, for sure. But, it's all good. I'll see him
in Tampa, so I'll take it out on him then. Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Our thanks to the fine folks at Fox for the lowlights of Chris Bryant getting robbed by Jared Walsh in the eighth inning. And of course, you had Bryant postgame saying he's thinking about a grand slam. The count hit 3-0 on that at bat. Also, you heard from Lance Lynn. He's had an easier run than most, and Tim Anderson, too.
Yeah.
Heard from. So great stuff. Good fun. Good representation for the fine people of Chicago.
Excellent commercial for Chicago baseball because
sure.
The Sox are, you know, in first place very comfortably. The Cubs, not so much, but certainly Chris Bryant and Craig Kimbrell represented the team very well. And you know what it was neat about hearing that those clips, Mully, is that you heard the interaction with reporters right there. It wasn't like through a video screen. It wasn't through a Zoom conference. This was actually reporters were there in person interviewing these guys, having that kind of, you know, thing that baseball has lacked. And you saw a full stadium in Denver, and the All-Star game went off without a hitch. And it was fun to see and cathartic in many ways because, you know, we're getting back to normal. And last night reflected that as much as anything we have seen in sports.
Yeah. Look, I think that when you talk about just seeing all the baseball stars together, just taking the photo, everybody on the field, just the quality of the players that are involved in the game of baseball, it is hard not to start playing a little fantasy baseball yourself. It's hard not to look at a guy and say, God, he'd look nice in a different uniform. Oh, you know, that's a horrible uniform he's wearing, but I know a much nicer one that he would fit very well. So you do indulge in a little bit of that kind of fantasy baseball as well.
Okay, so who were you fantasizing about being on the White Sox then? Which one were you looking at? Which All-Star did you see maybe? Oh, boy,
It's not the one that you think. I think the guy that I'm looking at was Adam Frazier. And I get it. He's not the big bad. He's not the – but he's everything – that Madrigal is supposed to be, and maybe a little bit better. And it was hard for me not to see him you know, making a play here or there, or see him get a hit or whatever it might be, without thinking that's just the guy they need. I mean, he just fills that spot.
I can't argue at all. Look, but let me say this, and this isn't sounding, you know, it sounds maybe a little bit wishy-washy, but any of the three guys that they could point to in terms of the names that have been mentioned, whether it's Adam Frazier, Eduardo Escobar, or Trevor Story, and I think maybe that is the least likely of the three names because he doesn't play second base, and you wonder how about that transition. We've talked about that. But I think any of those three that you get, if you're the White Sox, you feel good about. You would feel very good about, and you could envision making an impact on this team that doesn't need much, but would feel better about their October chances if they had an all-star caliber player at second base.
Okay, so I agree with what you said, but I've got to tell you that when I really pick it apart in my own brain, okay. And I found myself, my mind wandering and playing a little fantasy baseball, as I mentioned. But I got the wrong guy. I'm on the wrong player, and I know it, even though that's the guy I keep thinking of. I know that baseball could change significantly in the second half of the season. And I understand that while the first half was dominated by pitching, the sticky stuff is gone. They have changed the game. The second half of the season will likely feature a lot more power offense than we saw in the first half, because it started to toward the end of the first half.
Okay, so
as you got to, so I should be after the power hitters, and that's Escobar. I should be thinking about guys that can hit a home run.
Okay,
because that means
Trevor Story.
You're going to
let me counter that though, because yeah. And I have been the guy that was very early mentioned Trevor Story and. It didn't go over so well here. I mean, he thought that was it's a bit far-fetched perhaps because he hasn't played second base. But again, the reason I think any one of those three would work, and your point's well taken, but I think it's a lesser of a concern for the White Sox because of who else is coming back. You're getting the power from Aloy. I think he's going to bring the power back to the Sox lineup.
I hope so.
And I think Luis Robert is not far behind. So you're going to get two real quality bats, power bats in the middle of that lineup that I think maybe would make what you're saying about going after the power less of an issue at second base. Because I think that to me, why I say any one of the three are okay, what I will evaluate that trade for, if they do trade for a second baseman, is by what they have to give up.
Yes, yes.
I don't want them to overpay for any one guy because this is a team that is positioned well for the future. You can't ignore the opportunity in front of you to seize right now. You got to balance that somehow. But I don't want them to give up something off their major league roster, and I don't want them to give up a prospect too highly rated in their own minor league system. So that's almost impossible to ask for, but I'm asking for the impossible.
And I'm with you. I'm all for the impossible. Don't get me wrong. I couldn't be more excited about it. And speaking of more excited about it, how about
oh,
this?
Oh, my goodness sake.
Coach Wanstead is in the house.
What a treat.
This is unbelievable.
What an
unexpected. You didn't know Dave was coming,
no.
But he is here. And what a joy, as always, to have our favorite analyst, football analyst, our favorite coach. It's Dave Wanstead, and he's on with us now. Dave, how are you, buddy?
Hey, guys, it's great morning. To see you. You know what? I don't sleep much in July. It's too close to training camp.
That's good.
I'm like,
you're ready.
My body is still. I've been out of it for a few years, but my system, for some strange reason, I'm still up. I'm looking for Tim LaFever to scream at him about what time ask him what time breakfast is and get the whole thing going again. But
mid-July is kind of when you start to feel it, isn't it? As a former coach, as a former player,
it is. Yeah. This is a strange time of year for coaches and probably players because this is vacation time. It's after all the OTAs and everything's over with. It's vacation time, but yet it's tough to not focus on. Hey, you know what? In a couple weeks, we're going to be out there in training camp and what needs to be done and who needs to be signed and who needs to get healthy and on and on and on and on. So, it's a good time of the year, but it's exciting. It's right around the corner. I just got in town about 4 days ago, saw my kids, saw my grandkids, and now I'm ready for some football.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, I wonder if Eddie Goldman's ready for some football, because I think that's one of the issues. I know everyone says it's fine, everything's okay, but then you hear different rumors, different whispers. I know a video was sent out of him lifting weights.
Right, I saw that.
But Dave, I mean, let me ask you this. If a guy doesn't want to play, if a guy is reluctantly playing because of his contract, or if a guy is slightly apprehensive, or if retirement is going through the mind, isn't that a horrible sign for the player in the future and all the rest?
It's a sign that the guy's going to come up hurt, or there's going to be an issue quick. You know, I mean, I can't believe it. That would be the case. I mean, I love Eddie Goldman. I mean, I loved him at Florida State. But he's not Khalil Mack. What's he thinking? You know, I mean, unless he has lost his desire to play the game. I mean, that's got to be the only reason, because it can't be because, I'm good financially. I don't, you know, the Aaron Rodgers, I don't need to do this, or I'm upset because they didn't give me enough supporting cast on defense. I mean, they'll put all that aside. You know, do you want to play football? I mean, you're a young kid, and you got to establish yourself. You're still within the NFL, a little bit of an unknown guy, to be very honest with you.
And there's so much we don't know, because we haven't heard from him, and frankly, it doesn't sound like the team has communicated much with him. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. Okay, but look, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers. We got to get your feelings about what's going on in Green Bay, because of how it could affect the Bears, and how this has been a story that's dominated this offseason.
You know what? Terry Bradshaw said everything that needs to be said about. No, I'm kidding. You know, I talked Terry into coming on the afternoon show, and it got him into a bunch of a big jam, and he had a lot of fun with it. But no, in all seriousness, okay, let's put that nonsense aside. In all seriousness, I think it's just been a accumulation of a lot of things. Number one, I don't think drafting a quarterback, I think that might be 10th on the list. We would like supporting cast. I think that's a big deal. You know, what have you done the last few years to really help me, you know, excel? I think losing the Super Bowl like they did when they should have won that game at home. I think dating a girl, and it looks like it's serious. You know, a girl from California who works out there. He's from California. He went to school, you know. So I think it's, you know, you could just stack the things. You know, there's probably 10 issues, and it comes down to frustration. I think he'll end up at Green Bay. I think he'll play. I wouldn't be surprised if they come to some agreement. You know what, Aaron, come back this year. Let's play, and we'll give you an out maybe next year. But I don't see Green Bay budging. I don't see there being a big trade value for him right now.
When you think about them with him versus without him, how pronounced is the difference?
It's I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about Love, the backup quarterback, you know, to say that this guy, I know all their opponents would sure as heck like to see that, but wow. I mean, you don't replace.
No. MVP caliber.
MVP. Yeah. You don't replace starters. That was a thing that we used to always talk about in the NFL. Well, this guy, he makes me mad. He was late for a meeting. Let's get rid of him. I would say, okay, who are we going to get to take his place that can play at that level?
Yeah.
Well, now you're talking about who's going to take the MVP of the league's place that's going to play at that level. And it's not going to happen. As good a player as Love might be, it's not going to happen now. And then all of a sudden, it's the same problem, and the Bears are going to deal with this a little bit. You know, you got to win now, because you can say, well, I'm going to build this quarterback up for 2 years from now. 2 years from now, now all of a sudden you're looking at the Khalil Mack and company, all these veteran players that are no longer, their contracts are up, they've left. You know, a lot happens. It's a year-to-year league. It truly is.
Dave, are you planning to go to Canton? In a few weeks?
I am. We're going to go up. Jimmy's been unbelievable. We had I think we had about 6 Hall of Fame parties down in the Keys, but no. But we had one big one down there with me and Norv Turner. It was kind of the inner circle, and Troy Aikman came in, and Tony Wise came down, and Richie Dalrymple, our PR director, and brought our attorney along, and we went out for 3 days on the boat, and we had a great time. But we are going to Canton. We'll be up there. And it'll be a good time.
I laughed yesterday because Jimmy tweeted out something about he went out fishing and he had no success, but it was a lot of fun and he was planning on doing it again. All he does, right?
I'm not a 20-mile, let's go 20 to 30, 40-mile guy. You know, that's not me. I'll go 4 or 5 miles, and I like to be, maybe see the shoreline. That's about the distance for me. But no, he'll go every day if the weather permits. It's all about the wind. When you're a big time fisherman, and he lives right down there, you know, in the Keys and Isla Mirada, right on the ocean. He lives right on the ocean, and it's all about the wind. If the wind's okay, now you go. But no, it should be a good time. You know, we'll see Jimbo Covert up there. I played in a golf thing with Dan Hampton and Richard Denton, a bunch of guys, Monday here in Chicago. And I thought Jimbo was going to be there, but he was not. And, you know, it's funny, a story, Jimbo Covert. I was at Pitt with Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy was the defensive coordinator. And Jackie Sherrill, I was one of the staff. We were assistants together, Jimmy and I. And we just signed Jimbo. And he came in as a freshman. And he was probably the highest rated defensive lineman in the state of Pennsylvania that and around the country. He was a big-time recruit. And he came in, and we put him through the first day of drills. And I remember standing next to Jimmy, and Jackie Sherrill was the head coach. And Jimmy turned to Jackie and said, you know what? He says, and Jimmy recruited Jimbo personally. And he says, you know what? Jimbo is, I love him, Jackie, but I'm going to be honest with you. You got to move him to offense. He says he's not going to be a defensive guy in our scheme. Now, we had Hugh Green and we had Ricky Jackson and Bill Moss and all those guys, you know. But so he said, we got to move him to offense. And that's basically when it happened.
Was Joe Moore the offensive line coach?
Joe Moore was line coach.
Okay,
yes, sir.
And it's also a fact of Jimmy's life that he was at Arkansas right when Dan Hampton came in.
You know what? Great point. Molly, that was a great story. That's the opposite.
Yeah.
Because Dan was
an offensive player.
Dan was an offensive tackle.
Yes.
And Jimmy,
yes.
After watching him for like a Dan told me one time that he showed up thinking he was an offensive player, and they told him, no, go into the defensive line because Jimmy had seen something nasty to him.
And Jimmy coached him. Jimmy wasn't the coordinator at that time. He was the defensive line coach. And he grabbed Dan and actually coached him, I think, for his first year down there. But so Jimmy's made two personnel moves.
Pretty good eye for talent.
How about that?
Yeah.
The Bears won a Super Bowl with the cornerstones of their left tackle, who Jimmy moved from defensive line, and I believe Dan Hampton made a Hall of Fame, made a Pro Bowl at every position on the defensive line because Jimmy saw something and moved him to the defensive line. Is there an alternate universe where Dan Hampton's left tackle and somehow Jimbo's the defensive?
You know what's crazy? And I do a show every week with Hampton, Hub, and the guys down there at the studio. But I haven't seen Hampton or everyone since January. So they walk into this golf tournament, and as we're saying hello to each other, him and Richard Dent walked away, and I said, they're still better looking than anybody on the body. Seriously. If you walk them into the Bears, not just the Bears, the Packers, the Detroit Lions, the Steelers, they're better looking than 90% of the players today. I can't imagine, you know, back in the day trying to block those guys, you know?
That's what a Hall of Famer looks like, right?
Yep, exactly. That's what one looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. Dave, great joy to see you. Thanks so much
for coming in.
Looking good. Hey, I just talked to the boss. I mean, we're ready to go once football season starts.
All right.
I'll be here Tuesday mornings. We'll get the time and everything squared away. So, listeners, get ready.
All right. That is so
much fun.
Can't wait. Should be a great year. Quarterback issues. Oh, there's going to be a lot to talk about. We've got Ozzie Guillen next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Ozzie Guillen.
That's a White Sox baseball.
Analyst for NBC Sports Chicago.
La Pantera. My main is La Pantera. La Pantera. La Pantera. No. Pantera.
2005 World Series winning manager of the White Sox.
Tying run at second. Two out. Palmeiro. Over the head of Jenks. Uribe charges, throws. Out! And the White Sox have won the World Series. Juan Uribe with a play. Charging it. Throwing it. And the White Sox celebrate title in 88 years.
No holes barred baseball opinions.
See you later. Good luck, brother. It's still making you money. And go, you know what? Your next career will be WWE. They'll be waiting for you, puppy. That's pretty soon.
Ozzie Guillen with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always, always a joy to talk to Ozzie Guillen, and he joins us on the Home Run In Hotline. Try your pizza on the grill this summer. Visit homerunin.com for unique grilling recipes and more. Ozzie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guy. I'm very happy. Finally, the sun's come out here in Chicago.
Finally. Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so
amazing.
So help us out, Ozzie. When you sit here and look at this team, where they're at coming out of the break, are we expecting big moves quickly? Are we expecting more just kind of the same, try to ride the group you have and see when you make the move? But certainly something at some point, yeah?
We expect that. You know what I mean? The biggest move they can make, Jimenez is already swinging the bat. That's a good sign for the White Sox because I don't care how it come up. His presence on the ball club is amazing. If I was them, I tried to – if I was Tony, I tried to tell Rick Hahn, hey, no more rehab. Just bring it up. You know, because have his name on the lineup. He pump people up, and it's make another team worry about it. It's a big bat when they most need it, and I don't waste that much time with him. I know he got rehab, and I know they have to be careful. I know they have to make sure he's fine, but the way he swing the bat down the minor league, I will put him right now, be the DH for the White Sox pretty soon. The trade they got to make, I think so. Because I don't think they will make it with this offense. Like I say, I don't know when Pantera will be back in the lineup. I don't see anytime soon. But somebody can help them. Jimenez be one, and then hopefully they can find another one. One thing about the White Sox right now, they know they play very bad division. Or they don't know, they should know. Very bad, very, very, very weak division, very weak. I don't see any team out there like, wow, look at this team, look at this ball club. They got to compete. They got to not. I don't think they can. That's why they got to wait and waiting for making the move because they know they should be winning the division maybe by 10. I say that early in the season before everybody got hurt. And I keep saying that because I think they have a good pitching staff. But, they're always if they in the first place, teams in first place, fighting for the pennant race, fighting to get to the next level. They're always making a move. Hopefully they make the right move. Hopefully they don't make the move just to make fans, media happy. Hopefully they make a move, make sense for the White Sox.
Ozzie, Rick Hahn's not afraid to bring up guys quicker than anticipated. And you mentioned Aloy. The expectation was that it's going to be the end of the month. How realistic is it that they will do what you're suggesting and bring him up sooner rather than later? And how much does he need to face AAA pitching if he does need it at all?
Be honest with you, the sooner Houston Astros going, I bring it up because in this division, there's a lot of AAA pitching. A lot. A lot of AAA pitching. I've been watching baseball since I was 2 years old. And I watched Major League Baseball since I was 16, and the major league pitching I see in this level, in this division is not the one you like, wow, they loaded. Nope. They have one guy, two guys, maybe not no one. And I think right now what's the difference be facing guys in AAA faces guy here. Besides that, this year for the White Sox players, it's not about my stats. It's not how the only stat that should be worried about now is a W stats. That's a very important. And I think have this kid here, up here, he can hit 190, he can hit 2 home runs, he can hit 20 home runs, he can hit 390. That's a stat you got to count just to win games. I like to see him. It's one thing I like to see him, one thing I know the White Sox have another plan. But I think whatever he got to take the job from is way better than him. Even his 0-for-20, Eloy Jimenez in the lineup will be a really threat for another ball club.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting, the idea that he is already playing and coming back. Wanted to get your thoughts on Wilson Contreras. And right before the break, he came out and he talked about kind of the Cubs. We know the Cubs had an 11-game losing streak. We know they weren't playing very well. But we heard him come out and say basically that he and Javier Baez are two guys that are playing hard and playing with emotion and all the rest of it. And they're kind of a dead arse team. And he kind of called out other guys for not playing in the same fashion that they do. David Ross pushed back. It looked as if Contreras was going to be benched for the final game. It ended up a rainout, so that was no issue. How do you handle that kind of criticism as a manager? And what are your thoughts on Contreras?
Oh, my God. You know, I mean, baseball now is just kind of hard because people, depending where they come from, is cool. You know what I mean? And coming from somebody, people don't like him that much because his attitude, but the way he played the game is the right way to play the game. He's always been vocal. Now you cannot ask anyone in the clubhouse. I remember when anything happened in the clubhouse, stay in the clubhouse, no anymore. Players have got more power than the manager. Players got more power than front office people. And that's a fact. I'm not saying that just because. And another side, I see a lot of players talk about Tony La Russa. He moved in too quick. He let me pitch you another inning. I should be pinch hit. I'm not sure to pinch hit. I will swing 3-0. I am who I am. You know what I mean? I see stuff like that over the years. And I talk to my kids when I was playing. The respect you have for the manager was absolutely respect. Even what's wrong or right. Whatever happened in the clubhouse, staying in the clubhouse. Now I see Rossi, obviously, when you're a manager, you don't like those comments. And Rossi said the right thing. Say, hey, you better keep it inside us. But I see a lot of guys, vocal guys, and I think depending where the message come from, people listen to it, that don't criticize to it. When somebody being, you know, different, and somebody out, people, they got discomfort, they got upset, they shaky brain time. I see a lot of players making comments. Like, what? Why you not say that to the manager? Why you not say that to the players? Why, you know, the comments coming out and coming out, in and out, coming out every time. And I agree with both. I agree with Rosie say, hey, you know what? We appreciate you keeping in the house. But also, when guys be vocal, like, hey, I'm playing my butt off to try to get better. That happened with the losing streak, man. That happened when you're losing, this type of thing happening. And all the song I see guys like, come on, guys. And when you vocal, it's just because sometimes when you say something in the crowd, nobody listen to you. Or like, okay, good for you. Or all right, whatever, who you are, what you do. And that's the problem now. But I think both guys got reason. They had the right to say it. I see Keiko call out the White Sox a couple years ago.
Right.
When he only got what, two days with the team, two stars with the team. Keiko come up and everybody go, oh, look at Keiko, how great he is. Oh, my God, pushing hard for the guy. Yes, because it was Keiko. Now, if Rizzo say that or somebody else say that, people are like, yes, I don't know, we need that, but Contreras say that, I don't think people see that with a good eyes.
I agree totally, Ozzie. It depends on the source. And Wilson Contreras, by the way, he was exactly right. The Cubs have been playing like that, especially in two of those three games last week. So he had a point. I also wonder, you didn't have to deal with this probably too much as a manager when you were with the White Sox, because you were a manager that wasn't afraid to call out his team publicly for lack of effort or focus. It seems like you didn't have to deal with players doing that where you typically you would hear a manager do that.
You know, it's funny because I was talking with my kids. We talk a lot of baseball. And I say, they ask me questions. I say, listen, I'm managing big boys with a lot of guts. I can say that what I want to say in the air, but a lot of guts. I not see anyone come out and say anything about our clubhouse or ball club because they know. They don't want to listen to me or to the rest of the guys. That's the way it should be. That's the way it had bent like that. Nowadays, you know what I mean? Guys, you know what I mean? I see guys calling him up, the manager. Like, oh, no, you know, I was tired. I should be pitching another inning because I have 20 years in the big league. And it's funny, but I can say the Keuchel, when Dallas Keuchel say, I should go out there for another inning. Yes, you did. You should. In my opinion, yes, you did. I think Tony put you out too quick because the bullpen. But when he dropped it, I had 10 years in the big league. Well, Tony, 100 years in the big league. You know what I mean? That's like, oh, this is a stupid. If you look up this, I really do agree with Keuchel. Say, I say, oh, I was ready. But if you got 10 years in the big league, you told your manager, like Freddy Garcia told me in the playoff, I say, hey kid, I'm in trouble, but let me finish my game. All right, it's up to the manager to just make the yes or no. You know what I mean? That happened to me a lot, you know what I mean? And then, what's this guy named there, pitcher for the White Sox? He told me one day, I got in the next inning, I said, you're not the manager. I made decisions in this ball club. Me. I made decisions. You know, made decisions. And that happened from every of my teams. Okay? You are a pitcher. I'm the manager. I take you out. I put you in whatever. I won. Not what you told me. And that happened in Washington, D.C. We play Washington. And I say, okay, whatever. If you come from another team, you tell the manager what to do. That's your business. But do you know? You out of the game. I got somebody warming up, and get out of here. That's it. And nothing happened after the game. Nobody say anything after the game. But nowadays, man, believe me, it's just a little different way in baseball.
Ozzie, you know, we look at where the Sox are right now, and they, you know, the lead seems awful big. They're ahead of 8 games ahead of Cleveland. No one else in the major leagues has that kind of lead. Obviously, it's a big series against Houston, I suppose, because you might be facing them at some point. But what is Tony La Russa's job now? Now that you've established this kind of lead and you're feeling good about yourself, is his job to make sure the pitching is good at the end of the year? Is his job to make sure that players still approach every game with a killer instinct, even though you know you're sitting pretty? How does the role of manager shift as a team takes on this sort of a lead?
I guarantee you, every manager in baseball, everyone right now want to be Tony La Russa. Everyone. And I think you got the pitchers go to where they're supposed to be going because it's still early in the season. I'm not saying this because they're going to lose the division. I'm saying this because I think they got to pair up and build up for the end of the season. Obviously, one point, you will help them to, I don't say relax, but to make sure they're fresh when they go out there. Give guys a day off here and there, not just like, hey, guys, we got to push that button all the way to the end, because I worry about when the teams win the division very easy, next round they don't know what to do. And I see that people. I play with Atlanta Braves, and we win the division by 20 games. All of a sudden, when the stuff retired, it was hard for the team to come out and compete. Okay, they got to compete a good ball club because you're in the playoff for a reason. You got to compete against another division, and it's not easy. It's not easy, guys. Face the Central Division right now. Oh my God, please. You know what I mean? That's an easy way because you see teams. No, I'm telling you, I'm watching these games every day. And, you know what I mean? It's like, what is this? This is a big league baseball? That's the reason the White Sox kicking people's butt. Kicking people's butt with guys even was in the spring training in the big league camp this year. You know, guys look like, oh my God, look at this guy. Look at Goodwin. Oh my goodness. Look at Hamilton. Holy damn. Look at Cheeseburger. Look at Cheeseburger. He plays, you know, I mean, like, everybody looking amazing. Yes, because they play against the guys in their level. And that's a fact. I'm not making this shit up. And I thought those guys, that's why they survived, had that many games in the top. Now they had to push the pedal all the way down and not relax, because it's fun when you're in September and you say, the manager say, you know, you have a couple of days off. That's fun. I'm going to keep you fresh. That's fun. But in the end of the day, mentally, you have to prepare, because when you go to the big games, the next 11 games, that's the hardest game you're going to play. You have to be maxed out.
Ozzie, fantastic stuff.
Great
really
stuff,
appreciate
Ozzie.
It.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
All right, guys. Take care.
That's Ozzie Guillen. Wow. Really unbelievable.
Lot there.
Lot there.
A lot of interesting stuff about what today's player
says and how they respond and then what they say about managers, and also his view of maybe a double standard with Wilson Contreras.
312-644-6767. Certainly a point you agree with. Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
To be honest, I don't know. I'm just going to keep doing my job. The way I play is not going to change. That's on everybody's work ethic and job. We had to win as a team, but also I cannot ask everybody to play like I do or to play like Bias and I play. Everybody's different. I know that they might be tired, but I mean, I'm here to win. I'm here to win. I'm here to compete. And that's what I like to have from everybody else.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Excuse me. That is Wilson Contreras. And I think that's a solid cut there. I like what I hear from him. And I think, David, fascinating to hear Ozzie talk from a distance about what he's seen there. You got to remember that Ozzie played with the team and returned as manager of some of the guys that were teammates. It's a similar situation that David Ross finds himself in. And I would be very interested to have seen how Ozzie would have handled that.
Ozzie managed Frank.
Yes, he did.
Right?
Yes.
And teammates for a long time, friends. They remain friends and very good as analysts as well, by the way. And Ozzie was analyzing this situation in a way that allowed him to speak from experience. And he raises a really interesting question. And I did wonder this immediately, was that, and I think we addressed it a little bit, but like, if this was Anthony Rizzo saying what Wilson Contreras said, would there have been as much of an uproar? And frankly, would there have been a response from David Ross wanting him to keep it internally? I don't know if it's fair to ask that, but I wondered that. And I think Ozzie raises that fair question. He made the comparison as well to Dallas Keuchel, a veteran with a lot more experience than Wilson Contreras, certainly an accomplished pitcher in his own right. But he was here for all of 5 minutes, I think, and he was questioning or challenging his teammates publicly. That's somewhat that goes with the territory with today's professional athlete. And a lot of times we applaud it and we say that's leadership. You know it when you see it, right? And other times we criticize it. And I think Wilson Contreras has exposed himself to criticism for grasping the obvious and for being himself and somewhat authentic. And I don't know that in every case I would applaud a player speaking out in the way that he did. But on a case-by-case basis, in this case, I felt like Wilson Contreras had a point because he was right, and he has earned that right to criticize his teammates publicly based on how important he is to this team.
Let's take a listen to Ozzie here. Let's take a listen.
I see Keiko called out the White Sox a couple of years ago.
Right.
When he only got two days with the team, two stars with the team. Keiko come up and everybody go, oh, look at Keiko, how great he is. Oh, my God, pushing hard for the guy. Yes, because it was Keiko. Now, if Rizzo say that or somebody else say that, people are like, yes, I don't know, we need that. But Contreras say that, I don't think people see that with a good eyes.
So that is a very interesting comment because, first of all, I agree with him. I think he's right. I think if Rizzo comes out and says that, and it may be part of it is that Rizzo probably unlikely to say that, but it wouldn't be perceived to be an emotional overreaction, as you heard David Ross sort of imply with Contreras. It would be taken with a lot more gravitas, perhaps even by Rossi. So that's the problem when you really pick it apart in that fashion.
Why doesn't Wilson Contreras have gravitas in the Cubs clubhouse? This is a guy starting his sixth year for this team. He has had success. He is an all-star. He's as valuable as any player on that team based on who his replacement is and what they have done to try. The drop-off is considerable. We've talked about that. Why doesn't that resonate more with people around him? Why didn't they have his back?
Well, I would argue that part of it had to do with the cultural difference, that he's Venezuelan. You know, that there is this dismissal of an emotional player, of a guy that is, Willie will get angry, he'll get hot, he doesn't really mean it. The same thing with when he said something that Rizzo didn't like and they squared off, it was David Ross that's moving Rizzo out of the way. I think there's a level of it's what we're talking about all day in terms of the whole international aspect of professional basketball these days, of what we saw in the All-Star game yesterday. There are all types. There are different personalities from different places. Is there a level of kind of xenophobia that comes into play with a player from a different culture?
Or level of acceptance you may grant Anthony Rizzo or Dallas Keuchel that you wouldn't Wilson Contreras?
Well, what else would that mean? I think that's a fair question to ask.
I also think that there's some indirect, maybe veiled criticism implied by of David Ross or of the manager. Let's just say of the manager in this case, because we talked to Ozzie and I referenced the point when he was the manager. I don't think that you would find as many examples of players speaking out like this. Why? Well, you know what? They couldn't beat Ozzie to the punch. Ozzie would be, as the manager, the one who would be calling into question a player's effort,
his team's focus,
or their ability or inability to stay focused. And had David Ross been maybe more vocal, would Wilson Contreras have felt as compelled to call out his teammates for not being, you know?
Do you think Ross has been obfuscating the problems within the team when he talks about, we could have won this game, we could have won that game, oh, you know, we're still trying hard and we're doing this and that? I mean, he has done that a couple of times. He did it during the 11-game losing
streak. The first time it crossed my mind that was happening, perhaps, was when it looked like the frustrations were mounting. I forget what game this was in the losing streak. He went out and argued with the umpire, and he basically got himself thrown out of the game. It seemed like he was trying to light a spark. And I wondered at that point, when will he do that publicly? When will the frustration overflow so he starts attacking somebody in his clubhouse or collectively as a team that their effort or their focus isn't what it should be? Because managers and coaches do that all the time. And they expose themselves to criticism for doing that, but they've become the focus. So you're not focused on a player, or a player may not feel compelled to have to do that himself.
Yeah, I we have a texter who didn't like apparently my use of xenophobia when I discussed it, said, why can't you just say that a person of color isn't given the same latitude to speak by media and fans? Don't be scared to say the truth. I think I pretty much said that, didn't I? I mean, I do think there's an element of that when you're talking about the examples that we've given of guys that wouldn't be questioned. I would prefer to think of it as cultural, but I suppose it is a form of racism. Is that
I think that's what they want you to say. That's the direction they're headed. But I think I understood what you were implying. Not even implying. I think that's a fair question to ask, given what Ozzie referred to, and I think is fair to wonder, is the double standard when it comes to questioning teammates and questioning a team's focus.
All right, fascinating stuff. We'll get back to it. And if you want to call us, it's 312-644-6767. But we're going to bring in our buddy Lou Canellis.
Yeah.
He was at the All-Star game talking to all the central figures from Chicago, and we'll get his take on what he saw and how things went down in Denver last night, and we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.